You're listening to the Kennel Confidential Podcast, brought to you by the United Tree and Forest Association. I'm your host, Davin Ramage.
I'm your co-host, Chad Wagner.
Let's get into the episode. All right, welcome to episode zero of the Kennel Confidential Podcast. This will be an episode where Chad and I just kind of introduce ourselves and talk a little bit about what the show is going to be, what, you know, the types of guests we may have, and just give you a little bit of background on the host. So, I guess to get it started, Chad, then you're first on the list here, so we'll interview you first. How's that sound?
No, I love being under the gun all the time.
I'd rather be behind the gun.
Just try to miss every now and then.
All right, so just to get us started, Chad, why don't you just start with introducing yourself, where you're from, your background a little bit, what you did, whether it's dog related or otherwise, just to kind of give the listeners a little bit of who they're listening to.
Well, my name's Chad Wagner. I'm originally from Central Kentucky, Danville, Kentucky, and I moved down here to Dexter, Kentucky about 2 years ago. And everybody asks why I moved down. It's squirrel hunting and land between the lakes. So guess I got started into this for a few reasons. I started out with beagles, and I've always loved dogs. And be able to get dogs and actually spend time with them and do something with them other than pet them. So I got beagles back in around 99, and met up with a legend of the beagle world. His name was R.B. Sester, and he really helped me out a lot as far as breeding, what to look for in a dog. And all around 2005, I decided I was going to get a squirrel dog. Don't know why, I just decided I was going to get one. And it was amazing how much of the stuff transferred over from beagles to Feist. It was Feist a little smarter dog and a little more personable, I guess. But a lot of the stuff you look for is the same. The conformation, the breeding's kind of, when you look at how you're going to breed and what you're going to breed, is kind of the same. So. I just like being around dogs.
Cool. Right on. Can't blame you there. That's why we're here. But before we get into the dogs too much, maybe tell us a little bit about other hobbies you have. What do you do if you're not walking behind a dog?
Well, I like deer hunting. Just got into fish aquariums.
Just lightly right? Just barely in there.
Yeah, just barely into it 3 months ago, and I just barely got 21 aquariums now, so yeah, just barely into it.
Just jumped in with both feet, literally.
Yeah, it's kind of an addictive hobby, I guess, and then, of course, I guess just like dogs, you're always looking at, I wonder if I can take this and that and breed them together. Wonder what I'd come up with. So
you're breeding fish a little bit too then?
I'm breeding fish a little bit. They're not as easy to get rid of as you might think, and they have a whole lot more than a litter of puppies, I'll tell you.
I would imagine so. 21 aquariums is I don't know anything about fish, but that's quite a bit of fish to me.
Yeah, I think I had some angelfish, probably had 200 babies the other day, so.
Jeez.
I wish I could sell them for $300 a pop or four.
Yeah, that would that'd be a nice little cushion, little Christmas money, little Colorado camping money.
There you go.
Which you hit on it just a little bit about how long you'd been hunting with dogs, but just kind of remind us there. What year did you say that started?
I started with hunting dogs, beagles, in 1999, and I started with the Feist in 2005.
So the Feist then would be the breed that you are hunting now, obviously.
Yes, tree and feist. I guess to be more specific, they kindly did a little separation at UKC between the mountain feist and tree and feist in 2015, I believe it was. So I've got both, but I lean more towards the tree and feist.
So you've been hunting with them for some time then, and you mentioned that you didn't really know why you wanted a squirrel dog, but if you did beagles first, whatever got you interested in hunting with a dog at all? Did you grow up with hunting dogs, or just something that you just kind of like a fish, just woke up and decided I'm going to get all the way into it?
Didn't really grow up around dogs. I grew up in town. My cousin lived out in the country, and they went squirrel hunting with him and my uncle, you know, a few times when I was little, but that wasn't with dogs. It was just kind of still hunting. No, I guess just with dogs in general, I don't know. I just like animals and like dogs, and woke up one day and said, I think I'm going to get some hunting dogs. I guess the only time that I really got any exposure to hunting dogs is I had a buddy of mine I went to school with, and they had a beagle every now and then, and they'd have a bird dog every now and then. So I don't think they had real great dogs. I remember back, and I don't remember doing a whole lot with them other than we were afield with a dog pursuing game, and didn't really know anything about it at that point, so you know, I can't judge if they had good dogs or bad dogs, and I don't remember a whole lot about it, but that was really my first exposure to any of them.
Well, I guess if it's your first exposure, we'll just say they had good dogs then.
We'll give them the benefit of the doubt.
I don't know. I had a buddy of mine had beagle dogs in high school, and I went hunting with him one time, and we drove, you know, 45 minutes out into Nowheresville in the county north of us. Took two beagle dogs that they swore up and down were good dogs. One of them barked at something. I don't know if it ever run a rabbit. Well, we didn't shoot it if it did. So I guess you can't give all your first experiences can't make out for even a bad excuse for a good hunting dog. So you are into the squirrel hunting now and have been doing that since 99. Is that what you told us?
Since 05.
05, okay. And you got started... did you immediately jump into competition, or was it a pleasure thing for you? What was your first hook?
Well, it's kind of the chicken or the egg type thing, I guess, for me. I had a buddy of mine that his dad was a preacher, and they had squirrel dogs of one kind or another, and I guess that's how I found out there was a such thing as a squirrel dog. Of course, I didn't really talk to him much about it, and I was looking for a little something different. I was field trialing beagles, and, you know, you get to hunt beagles, pleasure hunt them 2 months a year or something, not very long, and, you know, you keep them all year, you run them all year just to hunt rabbits 2 months a year. So I woke up one day and said, I'm going to get a squirrel dog. You can hunt them things 6 months a year or better, you know.
Yeah.
So I got on Squirrel Dog Central. That's the only thing that was available at the time. And run across a picture, and I liked the looks of the little dog. And Jason Wagler from Lagodi, Indiana, Amish guy, had it up there. And I called him up. And, of course, at this time, I wasn't giving much for dogs. You know, I up until this point, I said, you know, if I can't get them for free or almost free, I'm not going to own one. And so I called Jason. He was 3 hours from the house, and talked to him a little bit. Kind of hard to get a hold of him, but we managed. And so I went up and bought him, and get $500 for him. And he said he was lightly started, I guess, in a starting pen. And
which, to scale that, was that a pretty good price in 05? I mean, it seems like if you scaled it from 05 till now with the price of dogs, that would probably be a pretty good dollar for a lightly started dog.
Well, to be honest, I really don't know if it's a good price or not. Because I didn't know much about them back then. I guess that was kind of the going rate, I guess. And, you know, I knew he'd been started in a pen, and of course my neighbor had a beagle starting pen. We put them in there, you know, they'd run a rabbit, and you take them out and kill rabbits to them. So I was like, well, this is great. I'll take this dog out and start killing squirrels to it real quick, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that was lesson number one. a starting pen is not the wild. So just because a dog is treeing in a starting pen doesn't necessarily mean it's ready to go hunting. Or it's ready to go hunting, but probably not ready to go do a whole lot yet.
Sure.
And so I got this dog, and I think it was in January. And I didn't know anything about a tree dog. So while on Squirrel Dog Central, there's a club an hour and a half from me, and that was Southeast Kentucky Cur and Fice Club. And Hurley Combs, I think, was president at that time. And they had hunts pretty well once a month. And through the fall and the winter and spring. And I decided to go down there and try to pick some brains of some older guys and learn about the dogs and see what mine's supposed to do and all of that. And that's kind of what got me into competition hunting. I said, my dog's not ready. And they said, well, if it'll tree a squirrel, it's ready. And so I got down there, and it was just a fellowship, a learning experience, and I guess an extension of another outlet that I could do for a hobby. You know, if you pleasure hunt, and it's, I guess, just like going to a rifle range. If you go to a rifle range long enough and shoot long enough and practice hard enough, and at some point you want to see how you stack up in competition, and you end up in some kind of shooting competition. So I guess that's kind of what got me started. But as far as the competition part, pleasure part, I think that I've always considered myself a pleasure hunter that competition hunts, I guess, is what I've always said.
So you're really kind of balanced there then. And I'd say that's a good way to be. That's it keeps you from being too bored, I guess, when there's not a hunt coming up this weekend, or when they're all further away than you feel like traveling to, or whatever, you know, life gets in the way or whatever. You still enjoy getting out and just knocking one out to a dog.
Oh, yeah. And I guess the best part about that is being able to go with people. That's, you know, Devin, that's how kind of how me and you met, is through dogs. And I've met a lot of people through dogs that I'm sure will be lifelong friends. And, you know, not much better of a time, you know, spending out there with people you have something in common with behind a good dog or two, or on a cast, you know, sometimes three good dogs. And even if you're on competition, I mean, it's still nice to get out and walk behind dogs with new guys, meeting new guys, and some of them you hunt with and compete against too. And it's just any time in the woods behind dogs can't be a bad time.
I would totally agree with that. So you mentioned that when you was on Squirrel Dog Central and come across your first dog, you said already that you had tree and feist and mountain feist. So out of curiosity, your first dog when you saw him on Squirrel Dog Central, was that a mountain feist or a tree and feist?
Well, he was a mountain feist, but really...
And what was his name? Let's call him by name.
Cedarwood Cloud.
All right. The OG, the original Cloud.
The original Cloud, yep. And back then, really, you didn't hear much about mountain feist or tree and feist. I guess they did make some distinction, or they did make some, I don't know, I guess distinction, but it wasn't really talked about and it wasn't as widespread as it is today, but he was a little stand-up-eared dog. He was a mountain fize. That's what it was registered at then, and, you know, he'd still be called that today if he was still alive, you know.
So it was strictly just the look of the fize that got you hooked. You didn't really, there wasn't any research, which, of course, there wasn't Google and YouTube, and, you know, you didn't have computers in your hands, at, you know, the same way you do now. Well, I mean, in 05 we did, I guess, but it's advanced drastically since then as far as how much information is out there. But it was really just strictly a look thing to you. That's what hooked you about the fize?
Not necessarily. I guess the big thing that hooked me is when I got to research, and I did know there was fize and there were curs. And I guess what really got me looking towards the fize is, why do I want a 60-pound dog to do what a 20-pound dog can do? So I think that's what got me really looking at the fize, was it's just a smaller dog. And sure, about the same size as the beagles I was hunting. And the kennel setup that I had for my beagles would also work for the fize. So it was a win-win for me, I guess.
All right. So just in the time that you've been around these dogs, you know, 18 years, give or take, how have you seen, I'm going to break this up into two questions. So first off, let's just start with the dog. So since you started all those years ago, how have you seen the dogs change? You know, let's stay on fize right now, because that's what Cloud was and that's what got you into it and that's what you're hooked on. So how have you seen the fize, which you've mentioned the split between mountain fize and tree and fize, but how have you seen the dogs change in the time that you've been involved? Do you think think they're getting better? Right, yeah. You hear people talk about whether they're getting better or worse. Where do you think we are in time?
Well, I think everybody's got their own opinion. My opinion is I think there's been a decline in the fize. I think with the onset of, well, I guess Squirrel Dog Central was kind of the start, and then on to Facebook now, and everybody's, you know, looking out at what's winning and quote unquote the best dogs, and people aren't doing as much, I guess, necessary line breeding, and I guess what I mean by that is, and I'll use myself for an example, I don't mind to load up and drive 1,000 miles in one weekend to go breed to what I want. And I think that people are doing that more widespread, and I think they're kindly getting away from what made some lines good. They're watering it down. So I think all in all, I think that some dogs are going backwards a little bit, I believe.
I got you. So sticking with the same question, but switching over to the sports side of it, and, you know, we don't want to fall into bag limits and that sort of thing. So let's kind of change back into the competition side of things. And how have you seen the sport as far as competitive squirrel hunting? Have you seen much change there?
I think the squirrel hunts have gotten a lot more competitive. I think the win is driving it. The competition's more than the camaraderie part of it. Get together, you know, once a month and learn about dogs and see new dogs. You know, when I first started, there was probably, we'd have 20 dogs every hunt, and there was probably 8 or 10 guys there that they wanted to win, don't get me wrong, but that they showed up every month not to win. They showed up every month to see the guys they haven't seen in a month and catch up. But I think it's gotten more competitive, and I think there's a lot more focus on the win, I think, now. It's not necessarily a good thing.
Right, yeah. Go back, because there was one thing I think I skipped over too fast with you. But so you were around, this is going back to the change in the dogs. You were around and you witnessed the split, I guess we'll say, between Mountain Feist and Tree and Feist, where you were in it at the time that they did that?
Yeah, I was kindly, well, at ground zero. I was right in the middle of all of it.
What drove that?
So,
and who was responsible? I mean, who was the first to split them, not responsible? I don't want to say it like it's a bad thing or we're trying to lynch them, but what was the thought process and who led that? Who was on the tip of that spear to split between the two breeds?
Alan Rosenbarger came up with Mountain Feist Association, and he presented his idea to NKC, and NKC didn't care much for his idea, and he pitched it to UKC. UKC kindly took interest in it, and I'm not sure if that came before or after the first MFA board, but and Alan lived up in Indiana, and one of the first board members was Earl Reynolds, and at that time he had become president of Southeast Kentucky Cur and Feist Club, and of course I was hunting with him. We talked a lot, and of course Earl liked a stand-up eared dog, and that's kind of where it was born at, and then they had the first Feist Days, which was the first squirrel hunt that Kerr and Feist were separated, and it was put on by MFA, and that's when the Mountain Feist were recognized as a separate breed in UKC. Before MFA come along, everything that was registered with UKC was a Treeing Feist. They didn't recognize any other breed of Feist other than Treeing Feist. So I guess London, Kentucky, at Southeast Kentucky Cur and Feist Club was kind of ground zero for all of that change.
What was the reception like? I mean, even outside of London, Kentucky, what was the reception to the Feist owners and handlers?
Oh, it was huge. First Feist Days, October 2015, last weekend, October, there was 46 Feist at that hunt.
Wow.
How
many days was that?
How many days? It was just one. It was a Saturday hunt.
Wow.
And I don't know that, I don't believe those numbers have been matched at a Feist hunt since. I could be mistaken, but I don't believe they have been.
And
I think there's only one hunt that was bigger than that ever with just Feist. And I believe that was, American Tree and Feist Association, I think, is who had that one.
So then, to me, it sounds like then it was a warm reception. It sounds, it makes me think the Feist guys appreciated their own hunt to draw out with other Feist.
It was a very welcome change, and it was received very well, and I think it's still received very well. We still aren't putting those numbers together, but I still think it's received well. Not that the Feist guys have anything against the Kerrs or the Kerr guys. I guess it's the same as way UKC looked at it. They were two different style dogs. You can take a thoroughbred, which is a racehorse, and you can take a quarter horse that's bred to be a racehorse, and both of them are great racehorses. Now, your quarter horse is not going to run a two-mile race, and your thoroughbred is not going to do very good in a quarter-mile race. But nevertheless, they're both great racehorses and great competitors in their sport, but they just don't belong together, and I think that's kind of the way the Feist and the Kerrs are. In my opinion, that's the way they are.
To me, it makes perfect sense. If I was in it and doing it at the time, then I think I also would have gave that a warm reception. But sticking with the competition hunting side of things, let's divide this into pros and cons. So what do you believe, let's start with cons so we can end on the pros. Are there any? I mean, I'm saying there are. I don't really know. We'll leave it up to you. But do you think there are any cons to competition hunting?
Yeah, I do. I think that, and you'll hear it said a lot, people talk about competition breeds better dogs, and I kindly differ from that. I think that an organization, association, a kennel club, whoever it may be, I think they have to be real careful with the rules they set and the standards they set, because it can hurt. You take beagles, you know, back when I was running field trials when I first started, you know, you wanted a dog to jump a rabbit, run it, you know, fairly fast, but never lose it, and get it back around to you to where you could harvest that and have, you know, table fare. After a few years of them loosening it up, or actually they changed the way the scoring system was to, you didn't get points unless there was a check, and that's when a rabbit, you know, a dog lost a rabbit and then found it back. After people got to breeding for that because they wanted more points, or they wanted their dogs to lose more rabbits, well, then they were jumping new rabbits and not staying on the same one. So inevitably, you go out to the field to hunt, and dog jumps a rabbit. You get up there where he jumped it at because that rabbit's supposed to come back through. And time it jumps another couple of rabbits, you're nowhere close to where you need to be at to kill that rabbit. So I think that it can hurt the breed. I think it can get away from a squirrel dog and become a competition dog. I hear that a lot, you know, here recently is, well, my dog's not a competition dog, it's just a pleasure dog. Well, not sure. In my opinion, I don't think there's really much difference, as I think that's the biggest con that I've seen on competition hunting, that, you know, if you're not careful, you take a young dog out, it can change a young dog. You know, if your dog's treed and my dog's treed and we score my dog and we go to yours, well, I'm just leading my dog to your tree. So I think that, you know, can make a dog a little jealous of somebody else's tree. They'll go to them and check them a little bit more. Of course, I'm not against the dog that'll go on or another dog either, but I don't want them to do it just because that other dog's barking. And I think that, you know, in a competition hunt, that can change those dogs a little bit.
But you would say that if you look at it that way, and that kind of change in a dog, it's absolutely easy to say that a competition dog can pleasure hunt, but a pleasure dog may or may not competition hunt, if you're in that line of thinking.
Oh, yeah, definitely. I guess if the dogs that, I guess there's some dogs that you pleasure hunt and that might not make a good competition dog, whether we like a dog to stay tight to a tree. Dog tree's on the tree and you call it treed, we want it to show us that one tree. And there's some guys that pleasure hunt that they don't care if their dog's on one tree. They just want their dog to locate a general area, and they go in and kill the squirrel, and hey, they're happy with their dog, and I'm happy with their dog if they're happy with it, you know.
Sure.
But that's not necessarily going to do very good in a competition hunt.
Well, then, so what do you think the pro to competition hunting is? What's the biggest advantages, if there are any?
I think the pros to it is, well, I mentioned it, you know, you make a lot of lifelong friends, get to see other dogs, get to see, like in the bench show, you get to see the confirmation, and you might draw out with somebody that's got a dog that dog does something your dog doesn't, and you really like it, and you're trying to figure out either, one, how to get your dog to do it, or find a dog that will do it. You know, it kind of help you see what you like and don't like. And I think the biggest pro of it is meeting new people, and especially if you travel. You can, you know, I don't know how many states I've hunted in, but I've probably got that many or more people in my phone that I could call up anytime. And, you know, Texas, West Virginia, you know, North Carolina, South Carolina.
Yeah, and I mean, we just saw that in our club the other day. You know, there was a guy up in the Northeast wanting to get a dog out of Michigan. Had a buddy running down that direction and just kind of hooked them all together and got his dog from Michigan back up to New York. And, you know, that if nothing else, the club and the competition brought those bodies together just to make those logistics a little less painful.
Well, just like Twin Lakes Coon Club over here close to me now. And, you know, I was 4 hours away and got to coming down here to some hunts and hunted LBL and met up with Grant Black and Donald Barnes. Of course, I've known Donald from before Twin Lakes and, you know, got hooked up with Leroy Gamble and, you know, all those guys down here. And man, they're just great guys, and that was the icing on the cake for me moving down here, you know.
Y'all even do a little motorcycle riding together now, don't you?
Yeah, me and Donald, we'll go riding. He was wanting to go riding the other day, and the battery on my bike was down, so I didn't get to go. But no, we go out on his boat every now and then and fish, and you know, we'll ride bikes together. And Leroy, we get together and hunt some, and oh shoot, he don't call on me much, but I'll call on him. He's helped me build my dog kennel here and pour some concrete. And
that is one thing I'd say. I met you about the time you moved over here, and that's one thing. When I started following you on Facebook, keeping up with dogs, and just, you know, I guess your move. Of course, you had one in the kennel I was waiting on. That's probably why I was following so close. But it was pretty cool. You know, it looked like there was a handful of people anyway that come out and helped you get your kennels built and just get you ready to get dogs from A to B, you know, which I thought was pretty cool, you know, for the club members to come out and support you that way.
Yeah, I had Donald and Leroy and Jay and Sharon Moore and Grant Black came out and helped. And, yeah, we got that thing done in no time. I couldn't have done it without them, and I had to fence in my yard for some yard dogs, and Leroy was right there. You know, I went and Grant Black let me get his tractor and post hole digger and brought it out here and done all that. And Leroy was Johnny on the spot, helped me stretch wire and set post, and he even had a bunch of steel post over there. He just brought me and didn't charge me a penny. You know, I couldn't. There's a lot I couldn't have done down here without all the contacts and the friends that I've made through squirrel hunting.
Well, lastly, just want to ask you, you know, I kind of gave you this harebrained idea, I don't know, a couple months ago, brought it up and told you that I thought a podcast would be cool. And then with everything I got going on, I kind of just put it in the back of my brain, and you called me back and lit the fire a little bit, and I do appreciate that. I'm really looking forward to it. But what would you say the purpose, what is your drive, your motor, what ignited you to want to be a part of this show?
Well, a couple of things. I think that the feist are generally overlooked when it comes to a bigger platform, you know, like podcast. I know there's a couple of guys that's done podcast on feist and for feist breeders, but if you look out there, most of it is hound and bird dog and beagle, and you know, and a lot of it has to do with the money hunts. There's not much out there, you know, for feist and showcasing the feist as a pleasure dog. Still, everybody wants to talk about winning the money and winning the big prizes, but that, you know, we come up short when we actually start talking about what these dogs are really designed to do, and that's, you know, put meat on the table. And I think we do the dogs a little disjustice and with some of that, you know. That's the biggest thing that I guess one of the biggest reasons that I wanted to do it. Another reason is, well, I mean, Davin, you got with me and we talk dogs a lot, and you're all fired up about wanting to learn stuff and pick my brain a lot, and maybe I do have something to offer people. So, and I hope this is a way that maybe I can spread some of that knowledge around, and if nothing else, you can look at things that I've done and say, yep, that's not what I'm going to do,
And, yeah, take it either way. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, and when I first started out at Southeast Kentucky, you know, Earl Reynolds, Hurley Combs, Jimmy K. Wells, Roy Smith, you know, there's a lot of guys, Blue Chicken, a lot of guys that I was able to talk to and knew a lot about dogs, and they would give me their opinion. They would talk to me about how they do things and how they did, you know, what they're doing. And the best part about it is I could take a little bit from every one of them, put something that I may have figured out, and come up with my style on it, you know. So, and I always tell people to do that very thing, you know, listen to everybody. Take some of their ideas and put them with things that you found to work and come up with your own way of doing things. You know, I've told my boys that from a young age, as working on, you know, cars or whatever they're doing, you know, talk to everybody, pick their brain, and then come up with the way that you like to do it.
That's definitely the way I do things, but I get called stubborn when I do that.
Well, I've been called a lot worse, but stubborn's one.
I got you. So, well, all good answers. I hope good questions, but all good answers.
Well, it's time for me to turn this gun around and me get behind the gun and see if I can do half as good as what you've done.
Well, at least I didn't set the bar real high. I'll give it a shot. I don't normally do good talking about myself, but I'll give it a shot. I don't know that I've ever been interviewed before, other than like maybe a job or something. I've definitely never been interviewed about a hobby before, so we'll see how it goes. I do tend to get long-winded, as you know.
Well, I'm sure not going to pay you for this, but it's definitely isn't going to be a job. I guess we'll go with one of the first questions you asked me is tell everybody a little about yourself.
All right. That won't take long. No, I'm born and raised in West Kentucky, have not even left West Kentucky that many times. Just ask my wife. She'll tell you we don't leave near enough. I've got a fast-growing family. Family of five, three kids, two girls, one little boy. Born in Princeton, Kentucky, lived all over West Kentucky. I don't really know where to say I'm from, but if I had to pick one, I grew up in Paducah, spent most of my life there, and am currently living in Graves County, Kentucky.
So how'd you fare through the tornado here a couple of years ago?
I was very, very, very fortunate. It the way the crow flies, you know, it passed 3-4 miles from my house before it headed on to Benton. Was very, very fortunate. Mayfield was not. There was a lot of people in Mayfield that was not. It left a big mess and destroyed a whole lot. It's will probably never look like itself again. But there has been some progress, some people rebuilding and those things. But that was pretty tragic. I was fortunate. I hate it for the ones that weren't. But I hope I never have to see anything like that again. That was the, you know, survivor's guilt. I can understand a little bit what people say. You know, I would drive through. I didn't have power. That was about the worst for me. We lost power for a week and a half maybe, but had a generator, figured it out. I think we lost water for a few days probably while they were fixing something. But, you know, you drive through town and you just see houses, cars on top of houses, and I was told through a bus into one of our water towers, brought the whole tower down. You know, you drive through and see those things, and then even if you're coming home to lay next to a kerosene heater on an air mattress in the floor, you know, you're dry, you're warm. It was December when that hit. It was a very cold part of December, and you just, it kind of led me to just volunteer everywhere because you just feel terrible driving through town seeing that stuff. So there was a little bit of survivor's guilt, but anyway, it could have been worse, could have been a lot worse.
Yeah, that was kind of a rough night. I moved down here in August, last part of August, and that hit in December. And we had kindly just met, you know, it said Mayfield. And I was like, I think I called you the next day to make sure, see if you needed anything. And that's, you know, goes back to one of those things about, you know, friendships with the dogs, you know. And we met each other through the dogs, and we've become, you know, I think pretty good friends and hunt together. But yeah, that was a devastating blow to the whole area, especially Mayfield.
Yeah, and you know, tornadoes aren't rare to Western Kentucky at all. I feel like it's like, I don't know, every other month now. It's been kind of a wild weather season the past couple of years, really ever since then. But so I can remember I was watching TV, you know, I think I was eating pizza or something, and I'm watching it on the news. They followed it. The local news station did a great job. They followed it all the way out of Arkansas, Little Rock, I think. And I'm watching it. I got a tornado phobia, and my wife, I drive her crazy. Thunderstorm, that stuff doesn't bother me. They say tornado, and I'm pacing the house. I'm looking at the windows. I'm a wreck. But anyway, she kept saying, "We're going to have to get in the closet." And I said, "Oh, I don't know. Well, they got close enough, and I went outside and got the hunting dog out of the kennel, and I had a cat at the time, lived in the garage. And I moved him from the detached garage to the attached garage. And she said, "We're going to get in the closet, aren't we?" I said, I don't know. I just don't want to leave them out there. Well, as it started coming into, it kind of hit Fulton. And usually when the storms blow up through Fulton to Mayfield, those are always the worst ones, it seems like. So when it came in out of Fulton, I told her, I said, "It's either going to head right to our house or it's going to go a little north and it's going to hit town." Fortunately for us, it was the latter, but unfortunate for many, many, many others, it wasn't. But I wound up in the closet with two house dogs. My wife was pregnant at the time, a 5-year-old little girl, the squirrel dog, and the garage cat, all in the closet together. I'm just too much of a sucker for animals, I guess. I couldn't leave them all out there. All I thought was, well, if that tornado hits our house and I live and the dogs don't, then I'm going to be real bored this fall and I'm going to feel terrible that I left them out there.
So what's some of your other hobbies besides dodging tornadoes?
Well, right now, I would have to say dogs, and I don't know if I'm any good at it at all, but I am, as you know, just been ate up with these dogs. But if I'm not thinking about dogs or talking to you about dogs or talking to a couple other guys about dogs, then I don't know. I love bow hunting whitetail. Sat the past couple years out. We're in one of the CWD counties, and with the restrictions and all the things they laid out there, it just kind of killed my desire to go because of all the added rules. But yeah, I would say hunting, really, that's about all I do. My wife tells me that I care way too much about the grass, but I guess the grass would be my other hobby.
Yeah, you jumped off into the grass pretty hard, I think, last year, wasn't it? And then you kindly backed away from it just a little bit.
Yeah, I had a dog coming along real good, and so then I got cocky and felt like, well, my dog's almost there, so I'll pick up something new. Attempted to pick up turkey hunting, never went, got too busy with work. Yeah, I got all the way off in trying to have one of those yards out of a magazine. Facebook's probably terrible for those things. I joined a couple, like, I don't know, lawn care Facebook groups, and you see all these other guys' yards, and it's like, why can't I do that? So I've tried to figure out how. Never did it, because then it was squirrel season.
I know why. Mine won't look like that, because I hate mowing. I let it get tall, then I mow it in the dirt, and I do that again.
you got to let it get... I had a guy tell me one time, no idea if it's true, had a guy tell me for the length of your blade above the dirt, you have that much root below the dirt. So I just kind of went with that. I just mow it pretty tall for that reason.
How long have you been hunting dogs, and kind of what got you started? And that's a two-part question, so I guess we'll go with... How long have you been hunting with dogs?
Not very long at all. I guess what really got me off in it, well, I don't know, that was probably 4 years ago-ish. My in-law, my wife's grandfather, had a cur dog in his kennel. And they've got walker dogs, and, you know, they're coon hunting hound guys. And I was always asking him about that cur dog. Even when I was little, I used to read the trader papers and the peddlers and all that stuff. And I always was telling my dad and granddad I wanted to... squirrel dog, and I was always told no abruptly. And something else they had to feed and clean up after, I guess, I'm sure was the reason. But anyway, my in-law had this cur dog in his kennel, and I kept looking at it and wanting to go, didn't know nothing about it, I didn't have a clue what a tree dog looked like, on a tree, that is. And he had a horse in accident, and took him a little while to recover, and so the dog had stayed kenneled for a while, so I brought it up again, and he kind of pushed me, just go, and I said, I don't want to lose your dog. He said, you ain't going to lose it with that Garmin collar on it. And if he gets lost, he's going to find a tree somewhere, so you'll hear him. And so I just finally worked up the courage, I guess, and went, and I was hooked. I never hit a limit with that dog. We would always fall one or two squirrels short, but I hunted him hard after bow season till the end of squirrel season, which was a terrible time of year to start, I guess, but I was still having fun. So that, I guess, four years, you could say. And then I got a Feist from you right out of the Cedarwood kennel. I don't know, I'm losing track, probably 2021, I believe. I think he was born July 2021. So I worked with him a little bit that fall, and had him going real good, you know, or at least I felt like he was going good. I was happy with him. Unfortunately, he got run over back in March, so that kind of threw the brakes on me a little bit. I didn't sit out long, as you know. I was probably away from about a month, you know, kind of wallowing in it a little bit, and cruise Facebook and listen to these podcasts similar to ours, and once you're bit with the bug, I just don't I don't think there's any anecdote. I think once you're bit, so I couldn't stay away from it.
I guess I was going to ask another question, but I'm going to back up a little bit. What got you switched over from the cur dogs to wanting the feist?
Yeah, I probably don't have a good answer for that. That cur dog was a good dog. He had, I think, done a little bit of competition in Illinois, but I could be making that up. I really don't know. He really was a good dog. I mean, you cut him loose and he'd get treed. 2 or 3 minutes, he was treed. He didn't run past any. You know, he treed him as he come to him, and I really enjoyed the dog. So, I tell people all the time, I still have nothing against curs. I one day will likely own one. I guess the biggest switch to me is probably similar to your answer. Going back to my in-laws again, they've got walkers in the pen, and, you know, they've had 2 or 3 litters probably since I've got into squirrel dogs, and they always want me to take one, go get one. And I always told them the same thing. You know, I don't see any reason in feeding an 80-pound dog to tree a squirrel. You know, I guess I'm a tightwad, you could say, would be my answer. And doing my research on feist, you know, I got into it later than you, so I had the advantage of a lot more information at my fingertips, quicker and easier to get to. So there's all kinds of comparisons out there to curs and feist. And once I read the hunting styles and kind of figured out that, you know, feist tend to hunt a little closer, that was important to me. At this time, I had no idea if I was going to competition hunt or not. I just wanted to be in the woods with a dog. So, you know, how deep it got and how alone it was, well, he's going to be alone anyway because I'm a one-dog guy. But I guess that weighed in a little bit. But I would say the biggest factor was probably because I don't need an 80-pound dog to do what a 20-pound dog can. I won't feed them near as much. They don't make near the mess. And after I got my first one, I mean, intelligence-wise, I'm with you. You know, I think they're highly intelligent little dogs and do just about anything you want them to.
Well, have you found that the feist go plenty deep for you?
Yeah, smoke, that Cedarwood smoke, the first one I'd got from you, he was real close for a while. I didn't know how I was ever going to get him away from me, but when he did, I was starting to think, how am I ever going to get him back? You know, I sent you a couple pictures of the Garmin a few times, and he was reaching out there and touching 600 yards, and I don't mind a dog out that far, but when you're hunting the hills of LBL just for fun, there had to be one closer, you know? So, They will go plenty far. You know, I just like a dog that'll tree them as they come to them. And if maybe he didn't come to one for 600 yards, but they will go plenty. They'll go too deep for me. I would rather see a dog stay between probably 150, 175 yards and 350 yards. That's really, if I can't hear them out at 800 yards, I don't have a reason for them to be that far.
So unfortunately you lost smoke too early. He was making a nice dog, and you were actually on a competition hunt when you lost smoke. So what got you looking towards the competition side?
I would say when he really got going, you know, he was the first one I ever trained. Didn't have a clue what I was doing. I kind of relied on where the red fern grows. You know, I was dragging that coontail for Dan and little Ann. Just kind of went with those, I don't know, call them old school tactics. Didn't show him any live squirrels or anything. When he got going good and I was really starting to think, you know what, I may have made a squirrel dog. I may have taught him to do what I want him to do. Then I went to tree and feist days. That was actually the down here in Hardin. I went to tree and feist days. That was the first competition I went to and watched the bench show. Went out on a cast as a spectator. And you know, you had mentioned the guy told you that if he'll tree a squirrel, he's ready. Actually, one of the club members, I took smoke out on an HTX hunt on that Friday before, I believe, and he did good, found a squirrel. He passed that first test, and I went back to the club. Or, I'm sorry, it was the next morning, and one of the members asked me when I was going out to spectate. He said, well, where's your dog at? And I said, oh, I'm not bringing him out on the cast. He's not ready. Essentially, you know, he told me, he said, well, there's only one way to find out if he is ready, you know, bring him out here. And I kind of took that to heart a little bit. I got out and started pushing smoke harder and harder and harder. And when the next hunt come up, it was just club hunt. I think there was somewhere between 10 and 20 dogs that next hunt, probably. I just kind of took it to heart and I thought, you know what, all I can do is go out and get beat. But, you know, I don't know, I guess after getting out and seeing the other dogs, I felt like I had a chance. And he did pretty good. The first hunt, I went into overtime, 3-dog cast, went into overtime with another member, had a good dog. He beat me in the hunt off. but still had a great time, you know, and we laughed and joked, and all the way back to the truck, there was no hurt feelings, nothing like that. I had a great time, and I was hooked after that. You know, really, one thing that I enjoy almost as much as the cast itself is the bench show. You know, I've really gotten into that, building that kind of discipline in a dog, you know, to get him to stand up there on that bench and stand pretty. And I am competitive in nature, have been my whole life. So I want the prettiest dog, you know, just like everybody else with their dogs on the bench. I want the prettiest dog. I want him to look right and stand right. And so I really got hooked on that, built my own bench out in the garage. I overdid it. I was, you know, I put way too much into that bench just for a training bench, but that's just how I do things. Anyway, now I really got into the bench show, and I would have to say that I probably enjoy the bench as much as I do the cast.
I guess it's probably a question that we'll probably touch on at a later show, I'm sure, but I guess I'm going to go ahead and ask it. But you being super new, been in two competition hunts yourself, I guess speak to being a new guy in the competition hunts, and tell some of the newer guys that's thinking about getting into it, you know, I guess your thoughts a little bit on the competition hunts and the atmosphere and, you know, what you enjoy and I maybe don't enjoy about it.
Well, first of all, I'd say just go do it. You know, if it's one thing I regret, of course, I had no way of knowing my dog was going to get run over. But, you know, it was March. So by the time I decided to work up the nerve and go get in my first one, the season's winding down. Competition season is, you know, with my family life and everything else, young kids, I can't travel as much as easy as some of the other people. So I really kind of stick to local stuff. So the first thing I would say is just go do it. I mean, if you're even thinking about it, even if you don't think your dog is ready, you know, to the point of the guy that I talked to at the clubhouse, you know, you won't know if your dog's ready till you go. So I would definitely say just go do it. In a short amount of time, I mean, I guess I've only paid dues once. So I've only been a member and hanging around the club for not even a year. I was hanging around a little while before I joined, I guess. But the people are great. I mean, I haven't met anybody I don't like. I haven't had a bad run-in with a single member. You know, they'll sit there and they'll talk to you like you've known them since school. You know, there's plenty of razzing back and forth, which is fine with me. I enjoy that. I can jump in the middle of that with the best of them. You know, but it's the club and the competition atmosphere is not near as competitive, I guess. I mean, it is. Clearly, it's competitive because it's a competition, but it's not like the weigh-in before a UFC match. You know, there's not a lot of bad banter. I mean, I think that if you go, then at least, you know, to me, I don't want to say it was surprising because I don't think competition people, I didn't expect them to be rude, but I can't say that I expected them to open up the way they did, you know. And then even after Smoke got run over in March, I mean, I had a handful of club members reach out to me the next day and I didn't even go back to the club, you know, for obvious reasons. I had to get a dog home. But immediately, I mean, you called me that night. Joni, the lady that I was out hunting with, you know, she was just super compassionate. She helped me find the dog, you know, and it was just super compassionate the whole time. They reached out to me later on, offered me a dog if I was ready. You know, I was very humbled, I guess is a good way to put it, humbled just by the outreach. You know, it was it's definitely a good place to make lifelong friends. I would totally agree with that.
Yeah, I know. I was out on the cast that afternoon, and Joni had called me or messaged me and asked if I'd talked to you, and I was like, no, and I called her, and you know, you could tell she was upset. You know, she was, and she told me, and I was like, well, that's one of them things. You know, you don't quite know what to say, and you don't know when. So that's why I waited a little while, because you know, I didn't know exactly, I guess, what to say and when an appropriate time to call. You know what I mean?
Yeah. But, Joni, I mean, she barely knew me. I think that was probably the second time. We hunted together the day before. So I guess if you count it by days, that was the third time she met me. You know, she was as upset as I was. I mean, and didn't hardly know me. She'd hunted with my dog a couple times, and that's all she knew of him. But yeah, definitely good friends, and I've stayed in touch with them since. And she, you know, she wasn't the only one. There was at least 3, 4, 5 other club members, and there probably wasn't but 6, 7 people there that day, you know. So it was humbling. It really was. Good people.
So we talked about, you know, mountain feist and tree and feist, and I guess what breed do you lean more towards, the mountain or the trium?
I like the tree and feist, and I don't know why. I can't define that, probably because it's what I know, and I don't know much. I lean towards the tree and feist some. I don't have anything against a mountain feist. I've never hunted with one, but I'd be happy to. I just tend to lean tree and feist, I guess probably because that's just what I've had. That's what I've been most successful with, between the, if you count my in-laws' cur.
What, now do you prefer the pleasure side, or are you, since you got into it, are you preferring more of the competition side of things now?
I think my answer to that is yes. I like both of them equally. The only reason I would have to say I like pleasure hunting more is because I can do it more often, but I'm competitive in nature anyway. I always have been, whether I'm playing my 6-year-old at Nintendo or I'm out on a cast with a group of people. You know, I'm just competitive in nature. I told you I started getting obsessed with my yard because I was jealous of all those guys on Facebook. I wanted that yard. I'm just competitive in nature. So I don't know that I lean either way. I think I'd probably ride right in the middle. If it's a local hunt and I can get to it, I'm going to be there if I've got a dog. And if I don't have a dog, I'm going to be asking you, hey, can I hunt a dog this weekend? I don't know. I eat squirrel, you know, so I do like the pleasure side of it because I eat it. I enjoy eating it. Yes, I guess is my answer, right in the middle.
Well, I know we've talked quite a bit about the podcast, and you know, you brought it up a while back, and I guess me and Vance had talked a little bit about it, and I got interested again in it and approached you about it. And, you know, we've talked quite a bit about it, but would you tell everybody else what made you want to become part of the show and start the podcast and get this thing rolling?
Yeah, I would say the big kick in the butt to me was, you know, when it come out that Full Cry was closing their doors. I hadn't even been taking Full Cry for a year yet. You know, I'd paid my subscription. I really enjoyed the magazine. I read it cover to cover, every issue that I got up until they stopped. And it just kind of dawned on me that I hadn't been doing this very long, but I really enjoyed reading it. And I think it's a good part of just the history with that magazine anyway, but I thought it was a good thing that didn't need to go. And I don't know anything about writing a magazine or publishing a magazine or where to even start with that, but the YouTube will teach you real quick how to start a podcast. So I guess that was probably the big thing to me. There's a couple other shows I really enjoy listening to. There's a show that is really competition focused. You know, they follow the money hunts a lot. They do talk to the UKC hunters every now and then, and not the money, but the trophy hunts. I enjoy that show. And then there's other shows out there where they just kind of talk about dogs and not competition related, just tree dogs or you know, any kind of game dog, working dog. So I guess to me, it was about bringing more attention to the feist. Like you said, it seems like a lot of these competition shows are really cur driven. Nothing against that. Like I said, I have nothing against a cur. That's what got me started. But I do think that there is a place and there's a hole and a void to really bring attention to the feist dog, mountain or tree, and I don't care. But they're very versatile dogs. You know, and in talking about the show and starting the show, it was also important to you and I that we don't just focus on feist. You know, I want to talk to the cur guys. I want to talk to the Walker guys and the English guys and elk hound. I want to talk to all of them. You know, I do anything to do with a dog. I just like, I've always had house dogs. I've always had success, you know, just obedience training my own dog. But I've just always enjoyed dogs. And, you know, so I felt like if I could find a little bit of time in my month or week or whatever to record the conversations that you and I have three or four times a week anyway, we might as well record them and put them out there and just kind of further the dog and just help this breed along and open the doors to the people that are maybe on the fence like I was, that, you know, they think, oh, well, my dog's not a competition dog, or, oh, well, I won't know anybody there. Well, don't worry about it. You know, just go. And maybe they need me to tell them, just go. Just go do it.
Well, I promise you one thing. If you don't know anybody there when you get there, you'll know them when you leave.
That's right. That is right.
I've not seen too many people that won't just talk to you. But, yeah, we've talked a lot about the show. And we've agreed that it's not going to be strictly feist. It's not going to be, you know, strictly competition hunting. It's going to be, you know, we're going to talk pleasure hunts. We're going to may even talk to a guy that's got a bomb-sniffing dog.
Maybe. That's right. That's right. We're going to do it all. Well, and through talking to you the other day, I've learned that there's feist out there bear hunting, and I really want to talk to that guy.
Yeah, there's a guy out west that's got feist that hunts big cats, too, you know. So I'd like to get a hold of that guy and get him on here. But yeah, we don't want to limit ourselves too much. We want to try to bring a little bit for everybody and hopefully make a difference and, you know, hopefully keep people out there hunting and, I guess, more importantly, get more guys new into it. You know, this is a, you know, technology age and most people don't want to get out from behind their phones or their computers or games or whatever. We need new people in the sport, no matter what sport it is, whether it's, you know, the feist, the curs, you know, the hounds, the working dogs, you know, whatever it is, we need people in the sport.
Yeah, I completely agree. You know, I've told you that a handful of times. Is my 6-year-old, she says she wants to go. We'll see. She has a hard time sometimes just walking 30 minutes to work a dog with me. But when her little legs get strong enough, or when I think they're strong enough, I would love for her to go with me. She really shows a lot of interest in the bench show. You know, the little pup I've got now, she likes to put her up on the bench and pretend like she's showing her, which I love to see that. She did it completely unprovoked. I just looked in the garage and caught her one day. And that really excites me. And I've got little boy and little girl that are about to turn 1 year old next week. Or this coming week, and you know, I've told you a handful of times, I feel like everything I get into is 15 years late, and I really don't want to see this go away. I mean, I don't think you could ever lose a hunting dog. You know, I think there's always going to be a use for tree dogs. There's always going to be somebody out there hunting a feist or a cur or a walker or you name it, but I feel like, you know, when I listen to these shows and I listen to these interviews of all these guys that have been around doing it for so long as you and some of them longer, you know, I just feel like I've really missed out on the golden years. So I'm ready for some more golden years, you know. So if I can do something to promote this and get it out there, and if it takes an hour or two of my week to do that, I'm more than happy to give that just to try to keep the tradition going. You know, just a working dog, whether it's a tree dog or a bomb dog, you know, a herding dog. I like getting on Facebook and watching those herding dogs. They blow my mind, some of the stuff they do. You know, I just love a working dog, anything to do with the dog, and whatever I can do to advance that, I want to do it.
Well, you was talking about your little girl there. I watched a guy pack his son through the woods on the shoulders for the biggest part of a world hunt this past year.
I've heard about him, Casey Sliman, right?
Casey Sliman, and he's got a few kids there, and he's getting them in the woods and having a good time with them. So, you know, get your kids, get them on your back, take them in the woods. You know, if Casey can do it, we all should be able to do it. And
yeah, he did. No, even had some pretty good hunting there at the world hunt this past year with a kid on his back.
He got reserve world champion packing his son around. So, you know, I commend Casey for that. He, you know, a super nice guy too, but being able to do that, you know, that shows a lot of fortitude for him, you know, so.
And patience. Lots of patience.
Yeah, I don't know if I've got that kind of patience. I don't think I ever did with mine.
He could be onto something. He might need to get a hold of Dan's and see if they can, and you know, instead of having your game pack on the back of your vest, maybe they could get like a satchel for a kid. Maybe he's onto something there.
Yeah, maybe. Maybe he should develop that and make his millions.
I'll buy one. If Casey makes that, I'll buy one. Well, so, you know, our focus for the show is really not to focus just on the competition side of things, not even to focus just on the feist side of things. We are feist hunters. So, you know, that's who we know. That's what we know. So we may lean that way a little more, but we want to talk to everybody. So really to make sure that we get this off on the foot that we want to get off on, we are going to kick off episode one with our first guest, who is going to be Cody Barnes of Missouri. Cody is breeding and hunting his own line of feist, and he is Facebook famous. I'm going to say it, Cody. Cody is Facebook famous for being a pretty successful road hunter. So we're going to get with Cody, and our episode one will be a conversation with Cody and just learn a little bit about his feist and what it's like road hunting a feist.
Yeah, I always look forward to talking to Cody. He's pretty interesting guy, and he's pretty funny most of the time.
Well, and you know, Cody was the one at the club that told me, "Where's your dog? You won't know if he's ready if you don't bring him." It was Cody that said that. You know, so maybe I blame you and Cody for me getting into the competition world, because I got the dog from you. I picked your brain, and then Cody pushed me in it. So I'll blame both of you.
Just as long as you blame Cody more than you blame me. You know, a funny thing about Cody is he told me one time, he said, "It doesn't matter what I'm driving. It's always going to be better than what you're driving because I'm driving it." And Cody thinks that way on vehicles, dogs, you know, whatever it is. And I'm sure we can drag a few good stories out of him. And I know a couple that I can't wait to talk to him, because we're going to get them on tape.
Yeah, you've told me one of them, but we'll leave that for a reason for somebody to listen next week. But I'm excited to hear the story. I want to hear Cody tell it. I feel like Cody's he's a good storyteller, I feel like.
I believe so.
Well, cool. I think that probably wraps this up for episode zero. Hopefully it wasn't too boring. Hopefully people will listen and enjoy it. You know, we've got a few ideas on people we're going to talk to. We're already working on a couple other things, even past Cody. But still, we would love to hear from whoever's listening to this. If there's a topic, if there's a breed, if there's an individual, you know, I don't care, and I'm sure you don't care either, Chad. I think I can speak for both of us that, you know, I don't even care if they're standing on a podium. If it's some old man that's got a poodle that lays in his barn and can tree a squirrel or a coon or a possum or all the above, I want to talk to him, you know. So I do kind of want to open that door a little bit. Feel free to reach out to us. We're going to have a Facebook page up. We're going to have an Instagram page up, which we could be messaged on both. There'll be an email address attached to the Facebook page. Anywhere you can find us, you'll be able to find an email address for the show, which is going to be kconpod. Kennel Confidential Podcast, kconpod@gmail.com. So feel free to just shoot us a topic, shoot us a message. Reach out and tell us if you're even listening. Tell us if you care. Tell us, you know, we'll be anxious to hear that. But anyway, the podcast will be available on Spotify, Apple Music, wherever you get podcasts. We're going to get it out there. There will also be a YouTube channel that we're going to get up and running. So if you prefer to listen to your podcast on YouTube, we're not sitting in front of cameras, so there won't be a whole lot of video there. There'll be some slideshows, like Cody coming up. We're going to get some pictures of his dogs as he's talking about the dogs. You'll be able to see the dog he's talking about. But I don't think you want to look at mine or Chad's mugs while we're talking anyway. So, yeah, just give it a listen, reach out, and hope you enjoy it. Anything else you want to add, Chad?
No, I think you covered everything, and I appreciate everybody listening. And if you like what we're doing, I'll echo what what Davin said, if you like what we're doing, let us know, and if you like it enough, let your friends know. So I think that's all I've got to add, but Davin, I really appreciate you letting me co-host with you, and I'm sure they don't want to look at my mug. It's bad enough listening to me, so but I appreciate you letting me co-host and be a part of this, and hopefully we'll make things a little more clear and maybe help somebody out.
I hope so. I do. I really do. Even if no one listens, I feel like we're going to get to talk to a lot of cool people.
Yeah, and if not, I'll have my voice on recording where I can at least claim someday I'll be famous.
Yeah, there you go. There you go. All right. Well, then I say we pack up and go home. Go to the truck.
Sounds good. It's close tailgating. Head to the house.
All righty. Thank y'all. See you again next week.